Welcome to a podcast brought to you by the American Academy of Orthopedic Manual Physical Therapists. Our academy is a national organization committed to excellence in orthopedic manual physical therapy practice, education, and research. And we're here to explore a wide range of topics with you through interviews with content experts.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the AAMPT Research Podcast. Today, we have a familiar voice joining us in Dr. Eric Chacones, who has also co-hosted AAMPT Podcast Extras. Dr. Chacones is the director of the Bellin College Doctor of Science in Physical Therapy Program and has taught extensively on differential diagnosis, research, exercise prescription, imaging, and orthopedic manual therapy. His research interests are focused on best practices in shoulder rehab, and he currently serves as the Florida Physical Therapy Association Chair of the Research Committee. Today, Dr. Chacones is joining us to talk about his AAMPT conference paper, co-presented with Dr. Mark Shepard, which was titled Modern Management of the Stiff and Painful Shoulder. Dr. Chacones, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
To start, do you mind just kind of speaking to how you and Dr. Shepard came up with the idea to put this presentation together?
Yeah, we both really wanted to come up with something that was sort of reflective on how we ourselves have evolved as clinicians and what we've learned. I think those are sometimes the best talks when you look back at your career and all the mistakes you've made and you think about how much, you know, you've improved maybe in a certain area. This was one for both of us where we both thought, you know, the amount of literature that's come out in the last decade to 15 years and the amount that we both have evolved in our approach managing these patients with adhesive capsulitis and a variety of different shoulder conditions, the stiff and painful shoulder, just made a lot of sense.
Completely agree. So when I was in school, we didn't really know what pain science was, or at least we didn't talk about it 10 years ago. I knew about the gait control theory, and that was about it. And now we know a number of different studies have correlated shoulder pain, chronic shoulder pain, to maybe nervous system sensitization, or other drivers beyond just my shoulder hurts, so treat the shoulder. In general, how do we find out if somebody might benefit from a different process of evaluation treatment maybe than my shoulder feels stiff, so mobilize my shoulder? What do you think?
Yeah, and so what we've tried to do is really adopt kind of that staged approach for rehabilitation classification of shoulder disorders, the STAR approach some people might be familiar with. Phil McClure and Lori Michener have published on this. And it's really a treatment-based classification system for the shoulder, considering the stiff and painful shoulder more in one category, perhaps the shoulder that's more unstable in another category, and then sort of your more rotator cuff-related shoulder pain in another category. But really the most important variable to it all is understanding sort of that idea of irritability. And you know, when we get somebody with that hot and painful shoulder, kind of like you're speaking, alluding to earlier, you know, there's a lot more from a pain neuroscience education and all these new, more contemporary approaches that we could take for those individuals. And so one of the big elements to our talk is comes from a case report that was published in JOSPT not too long ago, but it was Eric Sawyer and Paul Minkin and Adrian Lowe and that whole group. But they looked at kind of this, the use of pain neuroscience education, tactile discrimination, graded motor imagery for people with adhesive capsulitis. I know for me, when that was published a couple of years ago, it was very much an aha moment, thinking, you know, well, wow, there's a lot that we can do for these patients other than just try and mobilize the shoulder.
I think with the challenging cases especially, it's really important to not be afraid to use these case reports to guide what we're doing.
No, 100%. I mean, we can't wait. It's going to be another 10 years, unfortunately, till we'll really know what the science, is going to guide us in our treatments. And you just have to almost stay on ahead of that curve, right? Think about that patient that comes in with it. It's just high pain levels. Every little motion hurts. You know, they have a very, very low level of functioning right now. What can you do for that individual? You know what I mean? And a lot of times, historically, I was always sort of, we're going to have to wait for this to calm down. You know, we're going to have to sort of work around it a little bit. And that's not the case. I mean, I think some of these, maybe you could say it's not really evidence, but some of these new ideas that are emerging are really, there's a lot that can be done for those individuals to get them through that irritated phase, you know, early on. Think of graded motor imagery, the role it's played. We do have one, you know, good study. It was I think it was Adrian Lowe, but looking at this immediate effects of mirror therapy on shoulder elevation range of motion. And just pre-post test, immediate effect, if we take the contralateral limb, the limb that's not even affected, have them raise that limb in a mirror, you know, for 10 repetitions, we immediately see about a 10 degree improvement in range of motion. So anyway, little clues, little ideas and nuggets, I think like that, that aren't really strong science yet, that can help us make some better decisions now.
Yeah, and I think that also speaks to treating, obviously, the presentation, not just the diagnosis, you know, especially with the adhesive capsulitis, as the CPGs for it came out. It does have this staged approach of kind of treating based on irritability or presentation. And then with specifically adhesive capsulitis and people that have a shoulder problem, you know, what do you say to patients when they come in and you're thinking about using graded motor imagery, or you're thinking using other techniques to maybe down modulate their central pain processing? How do you approach that with patients?
Yeah, it's tricky. And honestly, that's something that I personally have struggled with when I pull out the Orientate app and I say, all right, I'm going to have you work through this app and you're going to see different images of the shoulder and you're going to, you know, it's really a challenging, I think, because I'm so used to sort of that traditional approach, right? And it's a challenging conversation sometimes to have because patients are used to that traditional approach as well. And they don't understand why you're talking to them about all these other things. By no means am I an expert in that. And actually, I farmed that out to Mark for our talk. That was his section of the talk because I'm so bad at it. But anyway, I do think that that is a different conversation, right? That's a conversation that needs to be taken with skill and finesse. I think analogies are some of the best things. When you begin to teach patients about pain, using some of the analogies that are out there is helpful. But yeah, it's not easy.
Communication actually might be one of the biggest components, and education might be one of the biggest components of our treatment plan. I think there's a tendency within the manual therapy group of people that use manual therapy all the time that it has to be a component of your intervention plan. And maybe when there's a stiff shoulder that's not very painful, yes, it could be, but in that group that comes in a little bit more irritable, more painful, sometimes a hands-off approach actually might be better than not.
100%. And I think that's where a lot of this comes from me, is I think about the patients that I pushed too hard and didn't respect the irritability enough and thought, you know, in my own, the back of my mind, because, you know, you have these conversations with other providers that say, if you don't get them moving, I'm going to do a manipulation under anesthesia. If you don't improve their range in the next 2 months, then, you know, that's going to be the next line of treatment for this individual. And you'd be so afraid that you weren't doing your job as a physical therapist, weren't pushing them hard enough. And I think one thing that I really learned after fellowship training was, like, less is more, right? The more that I can have finesse in my approach, the more that I can really select these individuals properly, the better off we're going to be.
Yeah. And that selection, that appropriate selection, I think oftentimes comes from experience or the mentorship that you really receive during residency fellowship, or just good clinical mentoring. I don't think that's just innate, because it's not by the book of standard decision-making algorithms, which is easier to get when you're in school.
Yeah, but you mentioned it earlier, and I wanted to highlight that clinical practice guideline is so well done. I mean, the adhesive capsulitis, that really gives us a framework that we can use to make those decisions. And I think for the level of the student, that's totally where you start, right? Is that, you know, that clinical practice guideline backwards and forwards, you understand the irritability model, and that can guide your decision making, I think, early on.
Yeah. And so aside from just thinking about manual therapy as a pain regulator in the irritable stages, or as a component of improving mobility when someone's stiff, in your presentation and your clinical practice, where and how do you feel like the role of manual therapy plays into people with this modern shoulder stiffness?
So my philosophy has evolved from, you know, I'm trying to mobilize them to increase range of motion and thinking about the mobility and thinking about the biomechanics, to really thinking about creating a window of opportunity from which I can begin to load the tissues of the upper quarter and really to get them moving in a newfound level of strength and motor control. because the manual therapy creates that window of opportunity for us. So if I can do any technique that we can do that's going to make them feel immediately better and immediately improve their range of motion, even if it's short-lived, even if it's short-term, even if it's, you know, we're looking only at the immediate effects, sometimes that's all we need because we can follow that up with good quality exercise. And a big part of our talk are these exercise progressions. So we show some manual techniques that we might integrate, but really it's the follow-up exercises where I think, you know, most of your benefit comes from.
Yeah, that's a great idea to obviously follow up manual with exercise or just use exercise alone. Kind of talk me through what you think the progression from maybe more of the irritable, pain-dominant person to maybe more of the stiff presentation to hopefully less stiff, less pain. Where is your exercise prescription globally start and end?
So with the high irritability, you know, I think you look at the central effects of exercise. So for example, contralateral limb training, you know, what can I do with the other shoulder, the uninvolved shoulder, to get them ready for the rehab that's going to occur on this involved shoulder eventually, knowing that I'm getting a lot of central benefit, knowing that there's crossover strength education. So that, you know, I think when you think about cardiovascular fitness and what can I do from a lower extremity standpoint, what can I do from an overall aerobic capacity standpoint to get this individual healthier, feeling better? I mean, we know that adhesive capsulitis specifically has there are diseases that make people much more at risk, right? So this is not an isolated, purely musculoskeletal condition in some ways, because you think about the role of the thyroid and you think about diabetes. Why do individuals with diabetes, why are they 20 times more likely to develop adhesive capsulitis, right? There are other systems at play. And so I think treating that patient holistically, obviously, in the case of high irritability. And then as you're progressing, you're getting more and more into your direct specific kind of targeting specific tissues and loading specific tissues to patient tolerance, really. And, you know, and think of the low irritability at the other end of the spectrum. Well, now we're really getting into some advanced stuff, right? We look at overhead control and loading patterns and perturbation and all these other types of exercise that we might integrate.
Yeah, I'm actually really glad that you brought up the components of, you know, contralateral arm movements, or especially the aerobic exercise, let alone the fact that this specific subpopulation of people with shoulder pain usually have some of these comorbidities. There's just so much evidence to suggest that just general exercise is going to be helpful for reducing pain. And I think that gets undervalued in so many instances. Maybe I'm biased to it, but sometimes people just need to move and that's going to decrease them their pain, and not thinking about their pain is going to decrease their pain. So even treating people's pain without treating their shoulder, that sometimes is going to be enough. I wonder, what are your thoughts on the people that say, because there's a lot of people out there, and I'm sometimes one of them, that maybe you don't need to touch the shoulder at all. What if manual therapy is maybe less helpful for somebody with shoulder pain?
No, I think that's a great point. I mean, there are some, I mean, you got to look at patient expectations and what is that patient desire? What are they hoping to get out of care? I mean, I think communicating and asking them. There are individuals that probably don't want you to touch their shoulder. And in that case, you absolutely should not. I mean, the worst thing we can do is impose manual therapy on a patient that probably isn't expecting it or doesn't want it, doesn't believe it's going to help. We know that if an individual believes manual therapy is going to help, is coming in hoping to receive that as an intervention, well, then certainly they're going to do better. But the opposite scenario, I would agree 100%. I don't want to push that on anybody. And I think too, from a efficiency of care standpoint, that's another important variable, right? Maybe this person's feeling pretty good, moving pretty good. Maybe they only need some exercise. Maybe they respond really well to exercise. Manual therapy isn't indicated all the time.
And that's important to hear. You know, for me as a fellow, you as a fellow, manual therapy isn't the only intervention we have as a component of this. And I think sometimes we lose track of that, not to speak poorly upon it, but it's a component of our interventions. What other interventions have you found to be maybe more or less helpful in the past that you might help guide listeners to? What's not worked for you in the past with this population?
Well, we talked about forcing them and you know, these painful almost stretches and stuff like that. That would be at the top of my list, where I'm eliciting a pain response while putting somebody in a very uncomfortable position for either a long duration of time or just with an acute sort of technique. You know, I think there's something to be said about the low level, the basic exercises that we all like, the old school, I guess you could say, physical therapy exercise. Think of pulleys, right? Pulleys are great in a certain scenario, but perhaps there are some things that we overutilize. Crawling your fingers up the wall and pulleys and sliding a towel up and down the wall. There are ways that we can make those exercises more effective. And I think some of the keys are really just progressing patients at an appropriate pace. So we probably hang on to some of these lower level exercises too long when the irritability is past and when it's, you know, we've graduated, right, to a next level. But I want to mention something earlier because this is a really important element to where we're at. We're in such a critical time point, I think, as an organization right now, in that perhaps the role of manual therapy is changing, and perhaps it's not the intervention that it once was in the 90s or in the 80s or whatever. And it's not novel anymore. And all of our students are graduating now with fairly decent skills in manual therapy. So it's not this thing that's relegated only to the post-professional world like it kind of once was. We have to redefine ourselves as an organization and figure out what does the AAMP fellow of the future look like, and how can that be applied to the student level, to the fellow in training level, or even to the mastery level. And I think that's when you have to start looking at these central effects and what we spoke about earlier regarding health coaching and exercise prescription and all these other variables really are going to be the future of our profession. And I think as an organization, that's what we want to begin to look at. And I know we are. I'm on one of the work groups looking at the definition of OMPT. And there are a lot of really smart, amazing people in that group that are working on that right now. So I just want to preview everybody, those that are listening to this and thinking, like you and I probably have thought in the past, gotten a little bit jaded, a little bit over kind of the manual therapy topic. More to come. You know, we're going to get much, much better. We're going to refine this. And there is a role for skilled manual therapy that we certainly can lead. But there's a lot of other things that we're going to be doing as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very important to consider, you know, what is a fellow from a bigger perspective, or what is AAMPS from a bigger perspective. Obviously, those are very different conversations than the one we're having today. But yes, the role of manual therapy is redefined, I think, from even when I was in school, learning about the arthrokinematics and learning about if it doesn't move into this direction, then you push it that direction. Because we know that pain changes a lot of those things, and we know so much more about pain now, and we know about how to modify pain and the neurophysiological effects of manual therapy. So as science comes out, I think we need to constantly be able to adapt to science and let science guide our profession as well as our educational experiences. But to that end, for those people that didn't get to your presentation, the virtual presentation, what are maybe some real big key points you wanted to mention? I know for me, one of my take homes from your presentation is people with shoulder stiffness don't need to be pushed on every single time as much as we thought. Manual therapy has a role, but we want to match our interventions to where the patient is, treat them based on their presentation, matching usually irritability to help to guide them to more function, more movement. What are some take homes you wanted to get out to the listeners for this presentation?
Well, another variable that you're really going back a ways now, but you know, we always thought that the direction in which you perform a technique mattered, right? You have to push them in a certain direction. I don't know about your schooling and mine. You know, if you went the wrong direction on a practical based on the concave convex rule, you know, you failed, right? You failed that practice. Right. And we're not doing that to people, I think, nowadays as much, because we know that, you know, the direction probably doesn't matter quite as much. The Johnson study from 2007 was kind of the landmark one, I think, for most of us. We saw, wow, you mean you don't have to do an anterior glide on all these patients? No, the posterior glide, that technique they did where they distracted the shoulder, kind of bring them up into sort of 90 degrees of abduction, you sort of distract in that position, and then perform a posterior glide. You kind of sustain hold posterior glide right there. And that one, in my opinion, or in my experience, has been prognostic. If I do that during the evaluation and they say, that feels so much better, that relieves it. That, you know, to me, that's prognostic. This person's probably going to benefit. But anyway, they had about a 31 degree improvement on average in that group of patients in the external rotation compared to the group that got the anterior glide that had about a 3 degree improvement. I just think we got to, that's been reproduced, by the way. There's been one other study since then, Gutierrez Espinoza, 2016, they found about a 46 degree improvement in ER versus 18 in ER in the group that got the anterior glide. So posterior glide does seem to help, but I don't know. I think it still goes back to, you know, what position is comfortable for them? What technique are you familiar with? What, you know, how are you able to relieve their pain with the exam? And maybe there's some symptom modification element to this. You know, I always try to use some of that Jeremy Lewis shoulder symptom modification procedure type of philosophy into this care. We've woven some of that into this talk as well.
I appreciate that. You know, I mean, the research really supports not using the previous theories, and there's a number of different radiographic and imaging based studies to show convex concave doesn't necessarily work the same way. So I think this presentation, not only does it help to identify what's maybe better current practice in managing shoulder conditions, but it's also where should we be going with our thought process, and then maybe it's redefining a lot of these bigger concepts. So your presentation actually has some pretty big implications, which I appreciate. And I appreciate you spending the time with me. And obviously, Dr. Shepherd, you two putting this together for AAMT. I know you have some background and interest specifically in the shoulder, and you're working with the AAMT task force. Can we get the listeners like maybe a little bit of a head start on some of the other projects you're working on?
Yeah, well, that one, and just so you know, that one is led by Jason Silvernail, and that is a, you know, amazing group. Chad Cook, Julie Fritz, Josh Cleland, Paul Minkin, Gail Dial. I mean, it's an amazing group. But that group is hard at work redefining OMPT right now, along with our president, Elaine Loneman. And to me, that's the most exciting project, because you get to see sort of what's the future. We have to redefine our organization, and what's the future of our organization is pretty cool. But it made me think when I mentioned Gail Dial a second ago, and you mentioned sort of this concave convexual idea. You know, everything that I've learned from him in knee osteoarthritis, just reading his publications. I mean, I've never taken a course from he did a pre-conference at AAMT years ago in Seattle. That's the only time I've ever taken a course from him. But nobody has published more on knee OA than Gail Dial and that whole team. And I just think that's another good example where he's not following any type of biomechanical concave convexual. He's sort of using this Maitland-based approach, but getting tremendous outcomes. So anyway, that's something that I teach a lot. You know, when I have an opportunity to teach orthomanual therapy, I'm trying to relay that whole approach and everything we've learned from that team to people. So that's really exciting. But yeah, that's pretty much it right now. You know, I'm involved in fellowship training with Belen College, and we have a DSC, and you know, it's been a fun journey and just constantly learning, constantly evolving. We have about 7 different research studies going on right now. So, and those variety of topics, everything from looking at smoking and correlating smoking with pain, and looking at patient expectations and sleep, and a lot of these newer sort of, I guess you could say, health biomarkers and health trends that we're starting to look at in the world of musculoskeletal pain.
As we've talked today, it's just a reminder that the research is constantly shifting, and we need to shift with it. And I appreciate the shift that it's going into, and what you're studying is maybe thinking beyond the tissue at fault and thinking about the person and different patterns of symptom and health modification. So I appreciate you and your team working through some of these research projects, and I appreciate you taking the time out of your day to chat with us today. If any questions come up, we're going to attach up your contact information to the show notes. Is it okay if our listeners go ahead and send you an email or get in contact with you about anything that's arisen from this talk?
Yes, sir. Of course. Yeah, it's eric.chaconis@Belen College. We'll put it in the notes. And I just want to shout out to, in our team, Dan Roan and Jody Young, who I know most people know. Dan's involved in AAMT quite a bit. So is Jody. But they lead our whole research department at Belen. And really, they do all the, they're the smart people that do all the work. I don't really play much of a role. But, and then the last thing I want to just say to all of you guys in this AAMT podcast is you guys have put a ton of time into this. And your whole team, I just think, you know, this is all volunteer. You guys put your own personal time into this. And, It's people like you that I think drive our profession forward, drive our organization forward. I just want to say hats off to you guys for that. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I appreciate it, and thank you. So we'll look forward to seeing you at AAMPT, and we'll look forward to seeing you in the future. Dr. Chaconis, thanks so much.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
This has been a production of the American Academy of Orthopedic Manual Physical Therapists. You can learn more about the Academy by visiting our website at aaompt.org. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram by searching for our acronym, AAOMPT. The views and opinions expressed on the AAOMPT podcast are those of the interviewers and interviewees and do not represent the official position of AAOMPT. The information presented should not be used as personal health care or clinical practice advice. If you need to find an expert orthopedic physical therapist near you, then check out the Find a Fellow feature under the Public Resources tab at www.aaompt.org, which you can find in the show notes.